All right, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to Gaucho Amigos. I'm Alex. Today my guest is Jake Morris. He's the longtime drummer for the band Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks. That is, of course, Stephen Malkmus of Pavement fame. And Jake has his own solo project. He's released a few albums under the moniker Street Nights. His most recent album, which came out towards the end of 2024, is called The Long Goodbye. And the first single off that is today's intro music. It's called Paradise Cove, and you can hear it all on Bandcamp, Spotify, or whatever streaming platform you use to hear music. And Jake is also a big Steely Dan fan. You might be able to detect that when you listen to Street Nights. And we connected over Twitter. You know, he sent me his new album, and I asked him if he wanted to come on and chat about his music and Malkmus and, of course, Steely Dan. And we did. So without further ado, this is my conversation with Jake Morris. Enjoy.
I am a like back end Gen Xer. And so my dad, so my parents listened to a lot of music that basically had like almost too much influence on me, I think. Like, and I've been playing music professionally, semi-professionally, since the early to mid 90s, and was not going for that then. But then, like, as time progressed and I got older, and you know, you keep going back to that sort of sound or time. But yeah, so they listened to a ton of music, but like the staples, like the top tier, was like Steely Dan for my dad and Linda Ronstadt for my mom. And it was just like in my DNA after a while. Then I had a fierce rebellion pushback against it, where like I hated it, and like my dad would like listen to it in the car and I'd be like, oh god, this, you know. And I was like probably major, like getting like heavily into indie rock and stuff like that.
Right. What made you hate it? Just part of the indie rock ethos?
Yeah. Well, like... it was like I was in jazz band at the end of high school, so that was still like sort of mixed in as like hip contemporary music and stuff. And yeah, the fierce, honestly, I think the harshest pushback, oddly enough, it was a very actually small time, because I think it was right around, I was looking it up today, it's like when Two Against Nature came out. Like, I couldn't stand the snare sound and it in the production, and it was just, it just seemed like a facsimile. And like, I was happy for them that they were doing stuff again, but it, like, it was not resonating with me at all.
And you were already drumming at this time, so you were listening mm-hmm. for stuff like that.
Yeah, and I was already, I moved to the West Coast in the late 90s and was just completely focused on, you know, finding people to play with and stuff. And but oddly enough, around that same time, I inherited the family minivan and I drove it cross country, and I had Gaucho got essentially like stuck in the tape player, and like it sort of became like flipped really quickly, and it was like very uncool, but it was like really resonating with me, like in this really emotional way, like where I'd drive by myself in the Lumina minivan and just listen to that. And you know, if people were in the car with me, they'd be like, oh god, like turn this off. And I was like, no, this is like really important to me or whatever. So, you know, I think the pushback didn't really actually last that long, but anyway, yeah. And then it's just each year just keeps churning back into the zeitgeist of just building and building, and it's pretty cool in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I've definitely bought my fair share of t-shirts, like
The Double Wonderful stuff and some of the
oh
other kind of
yeah, and then bootleg
yeah.
stuff, yeah, the Black
Yeah.
Flag crossover and
The Sonic Youth one maybe.
oh no, I didn't get that one,
Oh.
but I have one that's just like a giant, it's like Fagin's head with like a giant brain, and it's got like all of his songs that he's written in it. I should have wore it for this, actually.
I don't know if
Oh,
I've seen that one.
I'll send you, I'll send you a picture of it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. I mean, I know Double
Yes.
Wonderful has done a ton of them, and
Yeah.
then there's a bunch of other. The first one I got was the one that's the cover of Sonic Youth's Goo, but then they
Right.
put Fagin and Becker in, and it's
Oh, and
I love that.
I have a Glamour Profession one too.
Oh
That's like
yeah.
images of the whole. I mean, that's the thing I really love, and you know, I think when I made this record, there's sort of something I've always tried to do, not successfully, but just the visuals of these mini stories of these characters, like the I love the line, he's got a scar across his face, he wears a hearing aid. It's just like, what? I don't know. I just love
Yeah.
that being in there, and you have to kind of be listening to it for it to even like hit you.
Right.
Just these like visuals where you can sort of put yourself in these songs, you know.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody about this on another episode, I think, but like during the pandemic, I was watching a bunch of like old black and white sort of detective movies or like film noirs.
Yeah.
And there's always like not the main bad guy, but like maybe one of the henchmen or sort of side guys. There's always a guy with some sort of like, you know, he has a scar on
Defect.
his face. Yeah, something like that. The
Yeah.
one-armed man from The Fugitive is
Right.
another, or like I guess that was also in Twin Peaks. But
Yeah.
so yeah, when I hear the scar and the hearing aid, I'm like, oh, he's doing that. Like I that's
Yeah.
what that's where my mind went. But yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't read that much into it. It's probably, yeah, like a probably based on the real movie and a real character or
Could
something,
be.
but
Yeah.
yeah.
It's also the way he sings that line, so
Yeah. Hearing aid.
I've got detectives on his case. They film the whole
I mean, I was always really into music from the time I was like, I don't know, maybe 17. But there was a kind of a stretch there, like kind of in my 20s, early 30s, where it sort of took a back seat to other things in my life. And part of this whole Steely Dan thing has been like
getting back into music.
getting back in. I've been listening to more music and then obviously doing the account, doing the podcast, meeting people who have a musical background, talking to people about their music, and just, yeah, it's kind of been such a fun thing for me just as a hobby, you know, just to be back in that. I mean, I always listen to music, but like there's definitely like, you know, a 5 to 10 year stretch where I'd only listen to like a few new albums a year, you know, because I was like trying to figure out how to be an adult, you know.
Right.
So it
I
was
mean,
just like
that
a
happens.
yeah. That was actually kind of the time when I came to Steely Dan, because it just fit that time in my life. But
I mean,
yeah.
that's a similar to me in a like what I was saying with the minivan tape, you know,
Yeah.
like I mean, I wasn't making a living doing music, but it was like everything that I was trying to do, and in a way I I was learning a lot about new music, and I was a part of a community that was making new music, but like I needed Steely Dan to sort of like rest and sort of just like block that out and just sort of remember what I fell in love with in the first place, or you know, like what
right.
kind of so.
All right. So, in terms of your community, what kind of music were you all listening to? Was it more indie rock or?
Yeah. I was really lucky when I moved to Santa Cruz for about 9-10 months in California, and then around 97, 98, something like that. And then everyone in the music community there was migrating to Portland, where I've lived for basically 25 years now.
Wow.
And pretty quickly on, I was back when there was newspapers and there was ads in the back of the weekly. I was looking for a drummer, and it was like Polvo, Pavement, maybe, and Modest Mouse maybe were like the Touchstones, or it was sort of a cryptic, but I sort of understood what they wanted and like called the number.
Okay.
I was like, I'm your guy. having not met them, and
yeah,
and it clicked, and they're like all still my best friends. We were in this band called the Joggers, and
okay,
we had a little bit of a little could have been thing, and got like high Pitchfork ratings, and
really
had a label and a booking agent, and we're on a tour with like our heroes.
What year was this?
Well, that we started in 2001, and then stuff started happening in like 2003.
Okay, that's a good time to be doing that.
Yeah, it was still like, you know, like one of the guys had a flip phone, but like we all didn't have phones, and like we're, you know, we still had a map, and you still had CD binders, and there was still some sort of, it still felt old.
I feel like indie rock was kind of like on the ascent at that point, where people were getting tired of listening to just like, you know, I don't know, Linkin Park, and we're looking for other places to hear music. And then it just kind of became this codified thing, you know, like it wasn't just something that, you know, people who were in the underground were aware of, you know. I think the internet had a big role in that too, but yeah.
Yeah, and I wasn't even really that fluent with the internet, you know, like I graduated high school in 92, so
okay,
I was, and I've always sort of been technophobic, which is ironic because now I'm like running Instagram accounts for bands, but it was a great time, and we were, you know, on the precipice, and then things kind of imploded, and then we just kind of kept trying to get it back up through the early mid 2000s, and then the Jicks needed a drummer, and then the Jicks had taken the Joggers out to open in like 2008, I think.
Okay.
We were kind of licking our wounds and trying to sort of get back in it, and then I played softball with Steve for years, and so it made it, I don't know, I got super lucky, I'm super grateful, and it was really fun, still is.
I was just looking up your Joggers Pitchfork review. You got a solid 8, and the album was called Solid Guild. Amanda Prusich wrote the review.
Mm-hmm.
4-man harmonies. So were you doing harmonies in this project? Because I didn't listen to this before I talk.
No, but yeah.
Tell me about that. Tell me about that band a little bit.
I answered an ad in the weekly, and so Ben Whitesides he's essentially the mastermind and the lyricist and crazy guitar riff. And And yeah, we originally called Stateside for a second. We put out an EP, and then we did that record. And well, actually, no, we did another record that we self-produced, but then we took the three best songs off that ended up on Solid Gold. And then yeah, then we toured on that. We were like out with like Ted Leo and Ian Savonius's band at that time, which was I think it's either a weird war, and we were first of three. And then like midway through that tour, like the Pitchfork, which meant a lot back then,
Oh yeah, I remember.
was like, I guess the buzz was like we were gonna move up to main support, which I think kind of messed with our main guy's head. And we were on the East Coast, and we were in Miami, and like Cat Pot there, it was all like people we looked up to that were a little older than us in all these bands. And then they knew everybody, like all our heroes, and like we like hung out with Cat Power in Miami, and like we were gonna go up the coast, and like Polvo was gonna be in Chapel Hill, which like we idolized, and like Fugazi was gonna be in DC, like all, you know, it was just, and it just kind of became like a little too much for our guy. And so we
Too
bit
much in
we
what way? He like cracked
he
under the
basically,
pressure.
yeah, he had like a panic attack after we
Really?
played probably one of our most screaming shows ever in Atlanta. We used to, well, there's a recording of it somewhere. And then I had friends, me and Daryl, who's I still play music with now. Our band's called Blessed Chest, and he plays on the Street Nights record a lot. But he and I had friends. We went out after the show because we were first, and so we went out and we were hanging with friends. And we came back, and he was in a really bad state, and we basically had to jump off the tour. We took a day, we stayed in Atlanta hoping things would chill, and we just take a couple dates off and meet them. And but we ended up having to drive just straight to Boston during a nor'easter and dropping him at his parents in Boston. And we thought maybe that was the end. And it was really intense because, you know, it was, things were happening in a way that we all really wanted, and it was like right there. And anyway, sorry, I didn't know I was
No,
going to talk about this.
that's
So, you know, it took a long time it's to process and kind of
yeah.
get over. And then we regrouped and we changed. We brought in a new guitarist, my great friend Dan Wilson, also on the record. He has a great band called Diamond Gang. He joined like fresh out of college, and we had sort of this new energy, and we did another record, and I think got even higher Pitchfork score. And we just toured till we hurt and couldn't do it anymore and just got burnt out. That's the short version.
I'm sure I've heard. So it's weird that I haven't heard, I don't remember your name because I'm sure I've heard your record. I mean, a lot of the people you were mentioning, like I
Yeah, I
definitely
mean, I
listened to
think, you
Ted
know, we
Leo.
just, if we had made our way up the East Coast,
Yeah.
and you know, I think if we had at least gone another week, I think it would have, we would be a little more well known.
Okay.
Some people, I mean, there's still a lot of people that are fans that reach out to me and still come to shows and come to Jick shows, and
From the Joggers days, like
yeah,
they know
yeah.
you from that. That's cool. Yeah,
And
I
then
was.
that's how Steve knew me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was music director of my college radio station.
Okay.
So we'd get all the CD. I listened to every indie rock album that came out between like 2004 and 2007. Like I've heard it all. And I booked shows for the college. So I was like, whenever there
Oh,
was a
what
potential,
college?
it's called Hamilton College.
Oh, we played there. I'm
See,
pretty
that's what I'm
sure.
saying. I was like, I must have at least heard your record. Do you think you played a show there? I would have
I'm
to.
pretty sure we did.
It's very possible. I don't know if I personally booked you. It might have also been just before my time. Like my freshman year was in 2003. But I saw like we brought a lot of bands, and I saw tons of we saw a lot of bands that were at the very early stages of things, and then like a few years later, like took off in a big way. So it was kind of
Yeah,
an
I'm sure
interesting
we could.
time to be like in that sphere. But yeah, just the thing you were saying about Steely Dan, like needing a break from all that, like that's kind of when I got really into them, was like I had just spent 4 years completely immersed in all things indie rock. I listened to every album that came out because I was doing the college radio stuff. I saw a million concerts, some at school, like, and then whenever I was on break, I would like meet up with my friends and go to shows. So I was just like, so kind of, I could sort of see all the cracks. You know, after a certain point, I was like, oh, I see what you did there. Are you listening to these bands and you're influenced by this? So I was just like, I need something that's like the opposite of this.
Totally. Yeah, that was kind of well, it's, yeah, the, with the joggers too, like we had a tradition whenever we got to the final, when we were driving home from tour, the final stretch, we'd always listen to Fleetwood Mac Tusk. And it's like still to this day, like resonates in this emotional way. But it's really funny because we were this like pretty angular, like raw, like weird tunings and discordant. But then like when we were coming home and wanted to like settle, it was like the smooth 70s all the way.
But Tusk has some weird discordant stuff on it, I
It
think.
does. I think that's probably why it sort of appealed to everybody.
There's some like proto indie rock stuff, I think, going on that
Totally.
album. But I mean, it is still Fleetwood Mac. No, that record's amazing. Yeah, I can see it.
I mean, I think, yeah, that is a huge touchstone to like mid to late 2000s, where like the when the Grizzly Bear and this thing started to kind of come out of that, which was a little, I mean, it, we're parsing, but
Grizzly Bear was one of the bands we booked where I think they had formed literally weeks prior. And it was like a couple of years before their big takeoff. So it was just like seeing that was crazy. It's like those guys, like we booked them for like $100. They played. And they're
I
playing like
know.
Radio City Music Hall. But yeah,
We a lot of
sorry.
those bands like opened for us
Yeah.
and
Who
like
are some of them? I'm just curious. If you don't mind sharing.
I was also in this band, the French Kicks,
Wait, they
and
were they that was the show. It was Grizzly Bear opening for the French Kicks. That was
yeah.
I book or I don't know if I booked it or it was like me and my friend booked something. Holy shit.
I just did a tour, but they were friends of mine. They're
Wow.
on our we're on the same
Yeah.
label, and it was the same thing. Their
Yeah.
drummer left and they needed someone, and I did it. But they were, I mean, they that was their joke. It was just like everybody, like yes, Grizzly Bear, I don't know, probably like LCD, probably like, or just yeah, anybody that like became like a name was like, oh yeah, but they opened for French Kicks.
Yeah,
It's like
because the
that
French
what?
Kicks show at Hamilton, this would have been in like 2005, they were the headliner and Grizzly Bear were the openers because nobody had heard of Grizzly Bear at that time. The French Kicks were like, you know, they never really took off, but they were a little bit of a known thing, I think, right?
Yeah, I think they were just, yeah, they kept going. Yeah, so the first big tour that when Solid Gold came out was us, French Kicks, and then Hot Hot Heat. And
They were big.
they were in a van for the first week, and then Bandages like hit MTV, and 2 days later they had a bus, and we were all like, and they're like, we all like went on their bus for the first time. Everyone's just like, oh my God, like what's going on? And like the crowd's just like just changed, like got huge, like automatically. It was pretty cool to see it, you know, to be a part of it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
in terms of your relationship with Malkmus?
Well, I was a huge fan. I mean,
growing up, big Pavement person.
Yeah, they were basically my favorite band. The first Pavement reunion was starting to wind down, and he emailed me on April Fool's Day, 2011, I think, and asked, and in a very vague, cryptic email. and I was like, and then I was like, is this a joke? And then he's
flat
like,
out asked you to be his drummer, pretty much.
Yeah, he said they had, yeah, he was like, and then it was like a PS, and then he's like, there's like a 7% chance that Janet still might be in the band though. And then I was like, what is that? What are you like, what am I supposed to do with this? But yeah, then he's like sent me like a ton of demos, and then I was like, oh, I think this is happening. And then it's we've been going off and on pretty much ever since. I think he's a pretty underrated guitar player. And then there's this one European tour we did, I think for like Wig Out of Jag Bags, and every encore was just not written. We would just do this giant greatest, like this, like you were flipping an FM dial. Like we would just keep jamming like Louie into like Jane's Addiction into Joe Walsh into whatever, just like cascading like any song he could think of in his head. He would just like pivot and we would just follow, and he would just like sing it just from memory and then on to the next thing. And it'd be these like long 25 minute things, and you kind of get away with that in Europe, I think, more than the States. But I don't know, just that kind of natural. I mean, he's, you know, it's like Pavement was always like slacker rock. It was like, oh, they don't care, you know. And that's just like, it's like, hey, I'm so good, like it just looks like I don't care, like, but I think he really cares. But
so he worked hard to make it look effortless, is what you're saying.
Yes, but I think it was just, it was just there. I mean, like, I think if you listen to, if you compare like the like Slanted and Enchanted, those, like, it seems, it's like sort of simple bedrock, but like the melodies are like just like hook into you and just sort of takes from like girl groups and Motown and all of that stuff, and then like turns it on its head. And but you don't even notice till like years on. You're like, oh, that's like timeless. Anyway,
yeah,
I don't think I've ever really like talked about this.
Well, I mean, you're in a unique position, so you know, and a lot of people are really interested in that guy.
Yeah.
So.
No, I know. I've sort of, I've been like body man mostly, just like people. I'm just like, hey, back off.
Right. people get really obsessive over. It's in the same way that people get obsessive over Steely Dan. Pavement, I think, is one of those bands that brings out
definitely,
you know, a certain type of nerd music person.
Yeah, and the way the way things have sort of evolved, you know, like people just have no boundaries, and you know, more so I think than ever. But I mean, it's
like,
it's
in what way, what would they do? What's in, like, what would they do, what would someone do that's like, hey, that wasn't cool, just like being too kind of upfront about it, like too
just sort of not reading the room, you know, and just sort of like barging backstage or cornering somebody, or you know, like, in, I don't know, most people are cool, and he's very cool. I mean, he's a, I don't know, he's just a dude like anybody else. It's not, it's not like, it's not, I don't know, Bono or something.
Yeah.
But you know, it's tiring and sometimes, and you just, I don't know. People just don't give people their space sometimes when it's very obvious that that's what they need. But people, you know, are fans, they're excited. I mean, I probably was guilty of it too, and have been.
But you played it cool enough to, you know, actually be in his band. So
I
it's a little
guess
different.
so. I guess so. I'm sure there, I think there was a couple times where I didn't, that hopefully he just doesn't remember.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, I was watching clips of the Jix because I actually know what album I really liked was the last, I think it was the most recent Jix album, Sparkle Hard.
Sparkle Hard, yeah.
That was a great album. And
Yeah,
I
I love
remember
it.
I was like, and so kind of doing a little prep for today, I was just like watching some live clips of some songs on there. It's really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah. You can sync up, is it called Future Suite, I think it's called.
Oh yeah.
If you sync that up to Do It Again by Steely Dan, they totally sync.
Do you know his take on Steely Dan? Off the top of your head.
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I don't think he's a devout listener, or it's his vibe, or it's anything he would sort of go to bat for, but
Yeah.
definitely an appreciator. On the so I made during COVID, I made a record before this one called Human Condition, and I got him to play a guitar solo on the song called We the Light. And then his I gave it was like Larry Carlton and Steely Dan was like the inspo, and I knew it was out of his comfort zone and not his, but he nailed it. So it was like all of the, I think he sort of in his was like, okay, this is how this sounds to me, and then like sort of made up, I think he might have
He
made
put
a
the
different
Malcolmist spin
tuning.
on
Yeah.
whatever direction you gave to him.
Yeah.
And I listened to the album. It's great. I appreciate that you
Thank
sent it
you.
to me. I enjoyed it
Yeah, thanks.
a lot. I definitely hear some Steely Dan in there. They are an influence, right?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I think sort of what I was talking about earlier, like I think the older you get, the more you just kind of try to go back and touch the scrape the surface of sort of the music that formed you, like that's kind of what you're chasing, whether you know it or not. And I think a lot of that is on this record. I mean, like it's, you know, like I'm like I know my parents are gonna love it. You know, like
There's more broadly a sort of AM 70s radio like
yeah, which
feel
is
to
sort
some of
of
it.
where I fell in love with music, you know, at a
Yeah.
young age, and what I listen to, and when I hear certain songs still, I'm just like, oh, like that's perfect, you know,
Like what?
like ELO, Don't Bring Me Down, Melissa Manchester,
Oh yeah.
Pointer Sisters. Yeah, just things you almost like forgot, but then you hear them and you're just and you hear them in a different way, and you're thinking about production, and you know, you weren't thinking about production when you were 6, 7 years old or whatever. You're just thinking about where you were and how the song made you feel. And then I don't know, I feel like it kind of like that kind of stuff just like lives in you.
Yeah. I mean, you're
And
probably literally hearing things for the first time because you didn't know to listen for that, you know? Like you hear the cowbell, you know what I mean? Like when you hear that Pointer Sisters song, you know, when you're a kid, you're not like, "Oh yeah, there's some cowbell in the background." But
And the
then when you're
placement, right?
yeah.
Yeah. Or even something so simple as like the tambourine on the 2 and 4.
Yeah.
Like it has so much power. And like Cameron Spees, who produced the record with me, was really keen on just, and I've always sort of done that with songs, but I hadn't really thought about it. But then like it's just this subtle thing that's sort of like taking your hand and carrying you along that you don't even really know that it's there, but it's like more important than you could think when you're just like, okay, should it go to A minor here?
Right. Like in college, me and my roommate just like made an album in our dorm room. And I just remember going through that process and like just using whatever instruments we had at our disposal. And we had like some random percussion. And I remember just like putting a shaker, putting a tambourine, like, oh, this is how you get to these songs. Like I it hadn't occurred to me before actually doing it myself. You know, this is how, or like you add a piano melody, you know, once every 8 bars, but it's like that's how you get it to stand out, you know, things like that. I found that process like it's so fun. I think that's one of the things I love about Steely Dan too, is because they really take that seriously in terms of every last
Well, yeah,
nook and cranny of a song. There's
to the extreme.
yeah.
Yeah, but in a, you know. Yeah, I kind of get cut, like it kind of ends with Gaucho for me. Like I don't really, I was talking about the snare sound was what turned me off,
Yeah.
and just sort of where I was in my life and stuff like that. I listened to before we did this today, I listened to a couple songs off of Everything Must Go
Yeah.
and Two Against Nature, just to sort of
Yeah.
see if I still believe that. And I think there's definitely good songs on there, but they just don't like hold the same weight with me. Like I said, I'm ha happy for them. I saw them twice,
Oh, cool.
with Walter, and I won't go see him without Walter.
Why not?
It's he's I mean he's I love Donald, but Walter's as much of it as anything. And honestly, it's the banter, like, was half of the fun. Like his him talking and them talking to each other was the show. Like I don't really care for Donald by himself with the mic and nobody like there to sort of, you know, hold him accountable.
It really is like when you put Donald and Walter together, it's just this completely different thing. I mean, Donald alone.
Yeah, it's the push and the pull and the challenge and the shared history that only they know. Like, you know, I mean, Keith Carlock's been in the band a really long time now, and he has a lot to work from now, but he will never have what Walter and Donald had, and like both their friendship and their life before Steely Dan, and you know, and them deciding to bring it back, all that stuff, and then just being on stage and what that sort of means to them, and what they're, you know, they're probably doing little things to each other in the set that only they know, and that element not being there is just not as interesting to me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'll still go see them, but I don't think it's the same without Walter. I'll say that. Like, that was a different thing.
No.
Unfortunately, the one show I saw for one, because I came to them later, and I don't know. The first few years I was listening to Steely Dan, I didn't see them. But I did get to see them once with Walter, and he was kind of old at that point, so there wasn't a huge amount of banter. But I've gone back and listened to some bootlegs, and it's on there, so you can get a sense of it.
The two times I saw him, Walter was hilarious. And the second time, I liked the second show way more. It was like outside, and it was like all the bad boomer dancing,
Oh yeah.
which just made it. It was like a stuffy theater the first time I saw him, and it wasn't as good, I thought. But they did Daddy Don't Live in That New York City No More, and he had this whole monologue before it that was like, I wish I remember it, because it like made the show. Like, I was laughing like two songs later still. It was so good.
Oh man.
And just the self-deprecation that they both. And then you have, I'm sure you've read Donald's book, The Imminent Hipsters. Is that what it's called? Yeah, the tour diary in that I just love.
I'm sure anyone who's toured, for a living can
Just
relate
like
to
looking out at the audience, and he's like, "Oh, they all have canes," and
that.
it's like
Yeah, it was.
complaining about every venue. It's awesome.
Yeah, but it's also like if you know his music and who he is and where he's from and his sort of worldview, you can see how he feels this way. And he's not, I mean, some people were calling him out saying he was being like a spoiled jerk or
Oh,
something.
no.
But it was like, no, you have to understand like
Well,
who
that's his
Donald is.
brand. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you have to understand like who Donald is and
Yeah.
like it's almost more of a critique, more than a complaint.
A
You know,
critique of
he's
himself.
that too. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
I mean, you also just
Yeah.
don't know how much of it is like him just like being tongue in cheek or,
Well, he's writing a book. Yeah, he's
yeah.
trying to be, yeah, salacious intentionally, and
Yeah.
but no, if you've, I mean, I guess, yeah, well, yeah, I'm biased because I've toured a lot, but to me, it came across whether you had toured or not. But like,
Yeah.
that's just truth. I mean, you're doing what you like. Yes, if you sit and you, I think with age, you definitely are humbled by it and appreciate it more. And then the pandemic, obviously, you're just like, oh my God, maybe I really thought it was never going to come back, and I was really
Really?
worried about it and missed it, but it doesn't matter. After like 12 days in a row, you show up and you're just like, this place sucks.
Oh
My God, I'm so scared. Scared once you know me, you'll come to regret all the kindness you show me. Oh my God, I'm so scared. So scared that they're lying. So scared that they're blowing smoke. And I should stop trying. All the NDAs in Hollywood grew wings and flew. I think the reason I chose to sort of put everything into this is I was like kind of recognizing my songwriting chops kind of coming together, even though I'm at a later age, and then like putting things together more thematically. Whereas before, it's like if I wrote a song at all, if I had finished one, I'd just be like, great, cool, and then all right, now I'll write another, just like tried to compile them without any sense to it. And I mean, obviously, like sequencing and tempos and all that I could do, but just as far as like having it be a cohesive piece that's like, oh no, this is like a full story. I think it's sort of the first time I'm able to get close to achieving something like that, at least in my mind.
Now, how did you come up with the sort of general concept of the album, if there is one, the long goodbye? Where did that idea come from?
Well, it mostly the song on it kind of holds all the themes that sprinkle throughout it, which is just how we are just living in a collapse and we're all making our own terms with it, like calling things out when we feel it, but also accepting that we're powerless. Mostly as far as climate, I think, if you had to pick one, and then just sort of everything else that goes with it, and having been contributors to it. But also, I don't
Yeah.
know. It's you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah. No, I think you got there. I mean, I
Oh,
listened
thank
to
you.
it. There was a nice, it was a nice blend of different kind of musical styles, but it felt very cohesive. And I didn't fully, understand the concept of the music because I hadn't, I just have, I got to listen to it more, but I could sense it, it was sort of, and I guess bringing my Steely Dan background into it also,
That will help.
I'm almost, it's in there, so it doesn't take much to get it out.
Yeah, I'm not sure people without that are gonna necessarily
But that's fine.
understand it, but yeah,
I love
that's fine.
art that's just like some people will get it and then some people will like it but not get it, but they'll still like it because there are things in it that just are people will like, and I feel like Steely Dan is a great example of something like that where it's like you can just listen to so many of their songs on the basis of just like it's
Yeah.
a got a good beat or,
I think the younger generation of music consumers are, I love that about, like when we were growing up, it was like, oh, if you like this, you can't like this. You're this type of person, you're whatever. Whereas now I think younger people are just like, they like what they just like it. It doesn't matter that they'll pop or My Bloody Valentine or and then like play Chapel Roan the next and like
Right.
just like there's just like no, I
The
like
battle
it and it's
lines aren't
good.
as in place as they were.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. I think it's hard. I mean, there's just so much music now and it's so easy to make music at home and whatever. So it's a little harder to find stuff, but I think the stuff that is making its way is there's still a lot of interesting stories and young people like just being open-minded to it, like from the perspective of a musician is encouraging.